You ever watch the news and think, whoa, this seems...
unprecedented?
Unprecedented?
It's unprecedented.
This has never happened before. This is unprecedented.
Well, that's not always quite true. I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, is about finding times that what's happening now has happened before and figuring out what we can learn from it. Learning from history. I mean, who could imagine? Find new episodes on ABC Listen every Thursday.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
As Rajwinder Singh was sentenced for the murder of Toy accordingly, the judge has offered an explanation for what might have happened between the two of them on that day on Wangetti Beach. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to the case of Toya's murder.
The body of Toya Cordingley was found at Wangetti Beach, north of Cairns.
Her face adorns billboards and stickers across the region.
Searching for clues in the murder of the 24-year-old pharmacy worker.
Alongside the idyllic and isolated beaches.
This should not happen to a young woman out there walking her dog on a Sunday.
Convicted murderer Rajwinder Singh has returned to the Cairns Supreme Court today to learn his sentence. Chris Tester, ABC Far North reporter, has been in the room watching everything unfold. And Chris, it is great to have you with us on the pod, taking us through all of these big moments.
Yeah, thanks again, Stocky.
I want to get straight to it, really. You know, this crime has had a huge impact on Cairns. Toy Cordingley was 24 years old, killed while walking on the beach, doing something so many people do in Cairns. It's had an immeasurable impact on her family, waiting 7 years for this verdict. And Justice Crowley, who's presided over this trial, has now handed down the sentence that Rajwinder Singh will serve for murdering Toy accordingly. Chris, what has he handed down?
Rajwinder Singh is facing a life sentence with a minimum non-parole period of 25 years. Murder sentences carry a mandatory life sentence in Queensland, so that was always on the cards. But the non-parole period is an interesting one. It's actually 5 years longer than the standard of 20 years.
And Chris, how did Rajwinder Singh react to this sentence?
Well, much like he has throughout this trial, it just wasn't a show of emotion. He stood there, head was bowed, angled towards the ground, and for much of the hearing, his eyes just appeared closed as he listened to Justice Crowley deliver these remarks and outline the callous nature of what he's done.
And Chris, you know, when you say, you know, a life sentence in Queensland, does that mean life, or is there a year attached to that where it would finish?
Life means life in Queensland. As I said, that non-parole period is where the room for movement is, and that's what a lot of the submissions from counsel, prosecution and defence were focused on today, that earliest possible release date that Rajwinder Singh could have.
Mm, yeah, it's now been set at 25 years, and we'll get into the arguments that the parties made in reaching that decision, or in, you know, trying to argue towards Justice Crowley to set that level. But Chris, I wanted to start with the sentencing remarks from Justice Crowley, because he's painted a picture of this crime that we have not had throughout this trial. And there was no motive presented during the trial. It doesn't mean that the motive didn't exist, but there was no motive presented to the jury as they were deciding whether or not Rajwinder Singh was guilty or not guilty of murdering Toy accordingly. But during his sentencing remarks, Justice Crowley pointed to what he considered an obvious explanation for the murder and the reason that Rajwinder Singh took Toy accordingly's phone. Can you explain where he went here?
Yeah, look, and we did hear a little bit of it towards the end of the trial. You might remember in the closing address to the jury, the Crown Prosecutor, Nathan Crane, when he told the jury, look, you don't need to conclude anything about a motive. It's not an element of the offence that the Crown has to prove here. But he offered a version which appears to be what Justice Crowley has essentially accepted as the most obvious explanation. And he's really told this to the court kind of following the movements of Rajwinder Singh and also Toy accordingly on that day, on the 21st of October 2018. And he started, you might recall, with, we saw that vision of Rajwinder Singh leaving Innisfail and I guess that part where he dropped his dad off at the Sikh temple and then drove north to Cairns. And you'll remember we got that CCTV vision of him at the shopping centre kind of walking around aimlessly. And, you know, he sat down for that meal at the food court and spent some time at the railing kind of looking down at people below. And Justice Crowley said that, you know, it appeared he was people watching. And then he's followed the journey north to the northern beaches of Cairns, where he's ended up at Wongeti. And it's kind of there that Justice Crowley said this people watching is continued, but taken on a bit more of a nefarious flavour to it.
What does he mean by that?
We don't really know exactly what happened, because, of course, Rajwinder Singh hasn't given us a version of events that the jury has accepted. They've rejected what he says has happened. But essentially, Justice Crowley has taken it that Rajwinder Singh was doing something rather depraved, probably of a sexual nature on the beach. Justice Crowley's noted that at the point where Rajwinder Singh and Toy accordingly have interacted, it was quite a fair distance from both the northern and southern ends of the beach, the car parks, the two access points. So they're really quite far from, I guess, the main areas that the public's likely to see them. And Justice Crowley says that given the vicious attack that transpired, that it's quite possible that Toya discovered Singh there, and he said engaged in some type of disgraceful, embarrassing activity at a secluded spot where his true self could emerge uninhibited, and where the deeper, darker urges and desires could reveal themselves. And that, you know, it's perhaps likely that Toy accordingly has seen Rajwinder Singh doing something that he shouldn't have been doing. Perhaps she's challenged him in some way, or maybe even taken out her phone and taken a photograph. And he's put that would explain why Rajwinder Singh has taken her phone from the beach, which of course was one of those critical pieces of evidence that has allowed, A, the police to detect him in the first place, but then for the Crown to put this case beyond reasonable doubt in securing this guilty verdict.
Mm, yeah, and I mean, following the murder of Toy accordingly, Rajwinder Singh, you know, as we heard during the trial, books this flight to India, tells a different version of why he's leaving Cairns to, you know, almost everyone that he comes in contact with, and then kind of disappears basically for 4 years. No one hears from him, and Justice Crowley was quite scathing in the fact that he didn't contact anyone, not his family, not his young children during that period.
That's right. He's essentially said that Rajwinder Singh was a coward, that his only concern was to save his own skin. You know, he's made that observation that there was no proper goodbye, and that this decision to actually stay in India at a time that he knew he was wanted for murder. Remember on that tape, he talks to the undercover officer in the Cairns Watch House after his arrest about the fact that he'd seen that the police had identified him through his car, and he said that remaining in India while knowing he was wanted for murder only prolonged the anguish of the people who loved Toya and prolonged the administration of justice in this case.
Mm. Yeah, thank you, Chris. And I mean, the statements of Justice Lincoln Crowley as he was sentencing Rajwinder Singh were actually filmed. So there is a video available that it wasn't approved for use in the podcast. So we unfortunately can't bring you them at the moment, but they were made available to terrestrial TV for features on the 7 PM news and to One Channel's social media platforms as well. Chris, prior to the sentencing remarks from Justice Crowley, he does hear from the prosecution and the defence, and also some victim impact statements in making his decision. They're kind of trying to sway him one way or the other on where he should go. I mean, where did the prosecution go? What were they suggesting, or what information were they presenting to see Rajwinder Singh receive a harsher sentence?
They really went to what they called the moral gravity of this crime. So the default minimum mandatory non-parole period is 20 years. Crown Prosecutor Nathan Crane said Rajwinder Singh should have 5 years added on top of that. So, you know, a minimum of 25 years behind bars. That includes the almost 3 years that he's already served since he was brought back to Australia. And the Crown Prosecutor Nathan Crane really spoke to the public nature of this murder. You know, it happened on a public beach. It was a random woman. It really had that potential to struck fear into the hearts of the community. And I guess he also addressed this potential for the fact that what Singh did might have been premeditated. Now, Justice Crowley concluded that it was opportunistic that Singh didn't go to the beach that day, you know, necessarily with a view to kill someone, but he noted that, you know, he obviously had a knife in his possession. So an element of, you know, I guess a preparedness for this kind of confrontation. Nathan Crane spoke about that prolonging of the administration of justice, you know, the friends and family of Toy Cordingley who've been in this courtroom every day for 4 weeks, and they were in the courtroom every day for 4 weeks earlier this year during the first trial. This happened at a, you know, this delay was caused by Rajwinder Singh not returning back to Australia when he became aware that he was wanted for murder.
Yeah, and I mean, Chris, something that, you know, has been a kind of question throughout this trial, it was pointed to by the defence as a kind of unknown throughout, was, you know, how Toya Cordingley's dog Indy was tied to the tree. Indy was described as being, you know, tied up to the tree by her leash in a way that Toya would have been unlikely to have tied her. But Chris, the prosecution kind of suggested that, well, maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe it was actually Toya Cordingley that had tied Indy up to the tree.
Yeah, we'll never really know. I guess there's no hard evidence to say one way or the other, unless Rajwinder Singh should want to divulge that. To this point, he hasn't. It was, of course, significant during the trial because of these questions of why was his DNA not picked up on the lead, and we had all that evidence that so many people handled that lead, trying to remove it from the tree. The version that Nathan Crane, the Crown Prosecutor, has said could have happened is that perhaps Toy Cordingley was actually made by Rajwinder Singh to tie Indy to the tree herself before being made to do something else. And he said, essentially, the evidence in the trial doesn't allow you to determine that the killer must have tied the dog. Quite simply, we don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of unknowns in this trial, right, Chris? I mean, we don't really know that much about Rajwinder Singh, you know, outside of what he told the undercover police officer in the cell in Cairns when he was arrested after returning from India or being brought back from India. I mean, we did hear the defence submissions in this process as well. So, you know, prosecution has their go, and then defence kind of gets up to, you know, talk about the reasons that, you know, Rajwinder Singh shouldn't be sentenced to the full 20-year non-parole period. Did we get any insight into his motivations or his thinking through those submissions?
We didn't know, and Greg McGuire spoke quite briefly. He did refer Justice Lincoln Crowley to a number of comparable cases, I guess, to make that point in submitting that he shouldn't receive any more than the minimum mandatory non-parole period of 20 years. And I guess he really reiterated some points that he made in his address to the jury, that he was a man who was known as a competent nurse. He worked at Innisfail Hospital. And that he had no history of violence. He wasn't known to have committed any violence. No witnesses came to the court talking about any instances in the past where Rajwinder Singh had been violent. And again, he said, look, on the prosecution case, it was a motiveless, spontaneous killing, and that one can only speculate as to what happened on the beach, and that this was one incident of criminality over a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Chris. I mean, as well as hearing from, you know, the various counsel, you know, the defence and the prosecution teams, what we get when we have these sentencing submissions, the judge is kind of given a lot of information to base their decision on when they're handing down the sentence, and quite a significant part of that are victim impact statements. It's where we hear from people who have been affected by a crime, so they can talk about basically how they have been affected by that. We heard a little bit from Toya Cordingley's family yesterday, talking about how long this process had taken. We're talking 7 years since Toy Cordingley was murdered. What have we heard from Toya's family?
Well, Vanessa Gardner read the first victim impact statement, and she was supported at the witness box. That's where it's delivered from, by her partner, Darren Snake Gardner. He stood by her as she read out the statement, which was on behalf of the two of them, but also Toya's younger siblings, Lena and Jack Gardner, who we heard from during the trial as well. And she actually used the word theft, and she said she uses that word in conjunction with murder because Rajwinder Singh stole something not of material value, but the precious life of their daughter. And she spoke about this glaring hole that's been left in their family ever since. The toy was the glue that held their family together, and, you know, they have their gatherings for things like Christmases and birthdays. And She called it the elephant in the room, which is that Toya's not there anymore. And she said that they all know it, but it's just not something they say. Rajwinder Singh is actually sitting in the dock listening to all this. His head's bowed as the statements are being read. And Vanessa Gardner spoke about just the nature of the crime, the fact that it was done the most horrendous way, in that Toya would have been full of unimaginable pain and fear. And she's gone to Toya's character, which is, you know, we've heard a little bit about Toya during this trial, but she was a young woman. She was very passionate about animals, and her character fundamentally was one of peace. She had a positive outlook on life. We saw some of that actually come out during the trial through the messages that she was exchanging with people. And Vanessa Gardner says that she never hurt anyone, and that her family will never forgive Rajwinder Singh for what he's done, which was really reiterating a point that she made outside court yesterday when she addressed media briefly after that verdict was handed down.
Yeah, I mean, we heard yesterday from Toya Cordingley's father, talking about how, you know, the death of Toya has had just this huge and what sounds like a really significant lasting impact on his life.
Absolutely. Look, he's outlined a list of kind of mental health conditions that he suffered as a result. Remember, he actually found her foot in the sand. He's had to recap and retell that traumatic moment twice in court in two trials this year. And he's got this kind of complex, you know, mixture of conditions and PTSD and, you know, lack of sleep. Essentially, it's affected his ability to work. He's tried to do a few jobs, but it's just really fundamentally eroded his ability to cope. You know, he's withdrawn from social interactions and lost a lot of friends. It's really fundamentally and profoundly, I guess, affected his ability to function in day-to-day life. And he spoke about the personal toll as well, in that Toya was his only child, and her passing was that means he'll never have grandchildren. He too has spoken about her character and how proud he always was of her. He was in awe of, you know, what a positive and caring person that she was. And he said that she helped him become a better person.
Chris, we heard yesterday something that I found quite interesting, with Vanessa Gardner talking about the other victims of this crime, you know, referring to Marco Heidenreich, Toya Cordingley's boyfriend at the time. And, you know, he's basically been framed throughout this as kind of a potential murderer. You know, if it's not Rajwinder Singh, you know, it's kind of pointed to in a previous trial as a potential murderer of Toya Cordingley. Was there any discussion today about the impact that this crime has had on other people as well?
There was, and Crown Prosecutor Nathan Crane actually went straight to the heart of that in bringing up Marco Heidenreich's name. He said, look, Marco Heidenreich hasn't provided a formal victim impact statement to the court, but he said he's absolutely a victim. Look at the first trial and again the second one. Like, it's fundamentally the defence, and Justice Crowley acknowledged this too in his sentencing remarks, mind you, that the way that Rajwinder Singh is, I guess, put forward these alternative people as potential killers. And Marco Heidenreich's name in the community has been run through the mud, that the defence ran this kind of line that he might have killed Toya accordingly, and the number of conclusions that people have drawn from that. And Crown Prosecutor Nathan Crane has said that the court needs to look at Marco Heidenreich as a victim. You know, he was a grieving partner, but his name in the community has been sullied by this defence that Rajwinder Singh has run.
Well, we now have a sentence handed down to Rajwinder Singh for the murder of Toya Cordingley, a life sentence with 25-year non-parole period. That non-parole period will put him in his mid-60s when he's eligible for parole. Chris, this is the end of this part of the court process, but there is an option for Rajwinder Singh to appeal his conviction if he so feels like it. I mean, did you get any indication around court on Tuesday that may be coming, that an appeal might be in the works?
There was nothing flagged in defence barrister Greg Maguire's addresses to Justice Crowley in sentencing, and typically that's not the done thing. It's not looked upon very well in the legal world to flag an appeal so soon after a verdict. I asked the defence solicitor, Nick Dorr, about it outside court, and he declined to make any comment at this time. But the appeal period in Queensland is 28 days, which falls on about the 5th of January in this case. Christmas and New Year holidays don't factor into that. It's simply a countdown of a count forward of 28 days. And, you know, as with all matters, there need to be grounds for appeal. The lawyers will look at it. We'll know early January whether an appeal has been lodged, but I guess for now, for this moment in time, it is the end of the process.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. We'll keep you updated in the case of Toya's murder, and if an appeal is filed, we'll get Chris back into the studio and talk through what's unfolding there and the grounds and what that process will look like, if that process is started at all. Chris, we've had a heap of emails coming through to the case of at abc.net.au, even just in the day since our verdict episode. So a huge amount of interest in this case, in this trial. And I want to get into a couple of these now. We'll get into more in our episodes over the next week or so, but there's a couple here that I want to dive in with you. And this one is from Chris. I assume a different Chris. Chris writes, "Hi fellas, thanks for bringing this case to full attention. Justice must be seen to be done. Love your work. Upon learning this matter was a retrial, would this not break the double jeopardy rule? If not, what was the legal issue or fresh evidence introduced since the first hearing?"
Double jeopardy applies to acquittals. So it had the first, had Rajwinder Singh been found not guilty after that first trial, that's where double jeopardy would have come into it. They actually didn't reach a decision. The jury, after just over 3 days of deliberations back in March, was not able to reach a verdict, and they told the judge so, and that was Justice James Henry in that case. He discharged them. And in that process, a date is set for a new trial.
Mm. Thank you, Chris. And great question, Chris, as well. It's not confusing at all. We'll also be getting into our a sort of conversation about the two trials and the differences between them in our episode on Thursday. So make sure you hang around for that one. We'll really unpack the differences and some of the things we've heard between those two trials, particularly the framing of Marco Heidenreich and some of the other people who were presented as potential kind of persons of interest in this trial as well. Another question here, Chris, from Brett. Brett writes, "Hi guys, great podcast, but so tragic. I may have missed it, but the most obvious question seems to be, what was the reason for Mr. Singh being at the beach in the first place? Was it a regular part of his weekly routine to be at such a remote beach?"
These are kind of things we don't really know, because the Crown can only put forward, I guess, facts that they've established and what evidence they can lead, and the defence isn't obligated to call or give any evidence themselves. So we don't really have an answer. It's something, Justice Lincoln Crowley's inferred in his sentencing remarks that he was kind of up there to perhaps do something sexual and perverted, but beyond that, we can only make those inferences based on the evidence put before the court. I don't have anything further to really add, unfortunately. It's one of many mysteries of this entire ordeal.
Thank you, Chris. And yeah, great question, Brett. I mean, it's one that we would love to be able to answer, but yeah, as Chris talks about, it's nothing presented or nothing we heard to kind of point to that at all. And Chris, another question here from Scott. Scott writes, "Hi, Chris and Stocky, absolutely addicted to the pod. Hoping you can settle a debate I had with my girlfriend. We've seen a few people that have entered the witness box be subjected to the defence trying to show that they could have killed Toya, with ugly parts of their past being brought up, even though the police cleared them as suspects. Did these people have to take the witness box? Could they refuse?"
You can be given a subpoena to appear in court to give evidence, which is something with a bit of legal power behind it, and a court can actually order your arrest if you have a subpoena to be called to give evidence at a trial and you don't turn up. So unpleasant as it is, these people were required to go in and air their dirty laundry. And yeah, again, in the sentencing remarks, Justice Crowley pointed to Singh's defence as casting this wide net of people to blame for something that he himself had done.
Mm, yeah. Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Scott, as well. And Scott, thank you for sending through a picture of your dog, your best friend, Murphy the Cocker Spaniel. I mean, Chris, this is such a big day. It is such a big moment for the family of Toya Cordingley, especially, but probably I feel also for Cairns. You know, this is a case that for the last 7 years has kind of been something that people would be thinking about a lot when they're getting around in town. I mean, what was the mood like at court? How are people feeling now this process has ended?
I wouldn't say the mood at court today was one of celebration, but there was certainly an air of relief that hasn't been apparent during the trial. There's been a lot of, tense energy. The family and friends of Toya Cordingley not knowing whether they would get this, sense of closure. For what it's worth, we asked Vanessa Gardner outside court if she felt that she had any kind of closure, and she said not really. So it's not total relief. I guess it's never going to make up for what has happened, but it kind of closes a circle, a chapter in Cairns' history that's been, I guess, marked by so many doubts. And as we said right at the start of this series, that Toia's name is ever-present in Cairns because it's on bumper stickers, it's on memorials, and it's on signs. And there's that sunflower symbol that is associated with her name, and people really have spent 7 years calling for justice. And we heard Toia's parents thanking the community for that support outside court after that verdict was delivered. And there were certainly a lot of hugs and tears shared among the supporters during an outside court again for the sentencing hearing.
Yeah, I can imagine, Chris. So, thank you for being there and for taking us all, you know, through this trial with you as well. We really appreciate that. And Chris and I'll be back in your feed on Thursday with an episode comparing the two trials. As we mentioned in our episode yesterday, this was a retrial of Rajwinder Singh. The first trial earlier in 2025 resulted in a hung jury. So this one was run slightly differently, and there's some quite key, some really big kind of differences in the way that this unfolded that Chris and I will be talking through in that episode on Thursday, and some kind of shocking and surprising revelations from some of the witnesses as well that we'll be talking about in that episode. The Case of Toia's Murder is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. It's reported by Chris Tester and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller, and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the land of the Gimoy, Wallaburra, Yidinji, Turrbal, and Wurundjeri people.